Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Solving Aerospace Tech Development Challenges. My name is John McHale, Group Editorial Director with Military Embedded Systems and moderator for today's event. Our speakers today are Bill Tillman, Avionics Applications Engineer with Abaco Systems, Gary Gilliland, Technical Marketing Manager with DDCI, Chase Allen, Business Development Manager for Simulation Tests and EEDM at DSpace Incorporated, and Jordan Kariakidis, co-founder and CEO of QRA Corp. Now, before we get started, I have some housekeeping announcements I'd like to go over. This eCast will consume about 35 to 40 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. I want to point out some important buttons on your screen as well. First, please take note of the Enlarge Slides button. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You can also use the Download Slide button to view the slides as a PDF to see them larger. The second important button is the Forward to a Friend button, which enables you to email a friend to register for this event. Third important button on your console window allows you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A session. If you have a question intended for a specific speaker, please note so at the beginning of your question. Otherwise, I'll hand out the questions equally to all of our speakers. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the eCast. Please note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. This eCast will be archived online and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. And now I'm pleased to turn over to our first speaker, Bill Tillman. Bill, take it away.
Thank you, John. We are Abaco Systems with greater than 30 years of history, 700-plus people strong in experience and talent in the mil and aero test and simulation and embedded market, grown out of number of first-class companies to be synergistic in the propulsion of the customer into the next era of COTS solutions. When you're working with a complex technology integration that must be rugged and have long-lasting support, you want someone with years of experience working through the development and life cycle. Abaco has that support infrastructure to help your engineers through the development, integration, test, and sustaining support requirements that your customers require of you. The needs that we see are to reduce development time. We see the requirement to reduce development time from decades now down to a few years. In addition to the need for reducing that time, our customers need to reduce labor and life cycle costs. Resources have been focused to be reutilized in other areas, forcing companies to demand more from their experienced people from less time and assets. Companies know that they can only stay competitive by adding new technologies to enhance the performance and capabilities of their products within the framework of older aircraft systems. Companies have schedules that are compressed from decades to years to even months. New development efforts require much more complex interfaces between the sensors and the systems. Reutilization of existing systems are mandatory with legacy aircraft interfaces. These old system components are still viable. They just need to be connected to the new systems. The reason for this is that the old systems have been developed and tested over numerous years on many aircraft and aircraft types, costing many millions of dollars and labor hours to get them into the advanced and complete state that they are now able to be relied upon. They work, they're trusted, they're reliable, they are relied upon, and they cost millions. Examples of these systems: inertial and GPS navigation systems, fuel management system, flight management and control, aircraft electrical systems, and communication systems. These interfaces are specialized and require an in-depth understanding of how to use them from product conception to development through deployment and on into the maintenance phases. The tools must be used all the way from the learning of the capabilities of the interfaces to product verification, through product support into automated test equipment. Very specialized tools are required for system development in avionics. Their workforce is retiring or changing to be focused on the business's product and less able to handle the nuances of the avionics interfaces. Newer hires take time to spin up on the learning curve and practice with the usage of these old interfaces. They are focused on the technologies of narrower areas of the new sensor technologies and exciting R&D areas. Companies still need to be able to refresh their product rather than redesign from the ground up. But much of that old knowledge is gone, retired, or moved on. Companies must support that product much longer than anticipated and with fewer knowledgeable workers. New high-resolution camera sensor capabilities that are being developed must get that aircraft information by way of the existing buses on the aircraft. More sensors and controls just takes more wires to connect. You can see from the pictures shown where wires used to go from everywhere in the aircraft up to the pilot. Now we have boxes that gather and scatter the data, the sensor, the control information over the bus. Sensors like cargo and door sensors, speed and altitude sensors, temperature monitors, hydraulic pressure sensors, engine speed, controls like door locks, lights, flaps, slats, ailerons, fuel valves, pumps, and gates. The size, weight, and power usage of the old boxes compared to the new technology options that are available are very compelling to move forward, especially when you can buy a box that has everything you need in it, in I.O., and then with 10 times the processing capability, and top that off with significantly lower power consumption. Software has now become more of the critical element, and it takes a long time to verify its proper operation. Talk about size, weight, and power. It wasn't long ago that the airplane had to supply every passenger with their own TV. Many still do. Now the provision of Wi-Fi on board allows passengers to bring their own favorite device. The airframe no longer must supply content, power, and save that weight. No power required at all, at least until the battery dies. Legacy systems had large boards built using standard large-scale integration level silicon components. These provided one or two channels of 1553, or maybe a few channels of air ink on a 6U card. Our new boards are now provided with the use of high-density FPGAs, within which we can provide multiple channels of multiple types of IOs. Talk about reusability. From years of growth and development, we drop that FPGA onto any format board and only change the host side interface. Use that legacy IP in the FPGA, keeping the same software interfaces, using the same proven test tools and methods. We had boxes and boards with one or more channels of the same IO, but now we also fit all these interfaces on a single board. We now have multiple channels of 1553, 429, and discretes on the same 3U size board. External to the FPGA, we've added a simple file interface layer of components and support devices to connect to the real-world interfaces. We have fit these interfaces onto 3U size cards for the test and simulation and embedded community. These architectures are the same that we have used and grown and supported from over the years, now implemented into the FPGAs in quantity. Newer FPGAs over the years will provide higher density, lower power, and more IOs. Our test and simulation tools are key for our customers in their development efforts to bring that cost of development time down. They are used to do the verification testing, so that they can get their designs done right the first time and have a better opportunity to get to the finish line on time and within the requirements of the product interface standards prior to going out for the customer-required qualification testing and the integration testing. These same boards are used for the hardware verification as well as software verification for operating and providing data out over these interfaces. These legacy interfaces will continue to be used for many years. They are not going away. At Abaco Systems, it is the people with experience that make the product. These interfaces have been around for many years. That's the easy part. The product is no longer a computer with special interfaces. It is making these complex system of interfaces work together with ease for our users. It is the experience and expertise of the people that help the customer succeed with help through the development effort and then on into the testing effort. The new developers are younger with very capable and niche experience. The Abaco engineers' expertise allow the customer to bring the timeline down to add the new capabilities to the airplane system. It is a significant coordinated effort between cross-functional design, test, and production teams to get a system with the various new and old technology aspects to work together in a multifaceted, complex product. Abaco Systems has the business systems infrastructure in place to track these cards from the low-level components they are built from to when they come back for repair and upgrades and still be able to retest them. It cannot be stressed enough how important the level of experience and support for this system level of product is required. These systems are required to support all the major operating systems that are used. And then there are numerous other OSs that get into the mix, which can also be supported with an easier path to integration. And with that, pass it back to you, John.
Thank you very much, Bill. Now on to our next presentation. But before I do, I just want to remind the audience, keep sending questions in. Once our fourth speaker is finished, we will get to your questions. And now for our second speaker, Gary Gilliland. Gary, take it away.
Well, thanks a lot, John. Next I'm going to, Bill, talk to you a little bit about hardware. I'm going to talk to you about what layer of, first layer of software that you need to put on that hardware. So I'm Gary Gilliland, as announced there. You see my smiling face. I work for a company called DDCI, and we do certifiable avionics operating systems. It's our primary market, pretty much our only market. So that's what we're focused at and have been for the last 10 to 20 years, 30 years in mission critical and safety markets as well. So some of our core competencies are being able to do certifiable, safety critical RTOS products, support for all the main scheduling algorithms, A-Ring 653, RMA, hybrid approach. We have a tremendous pedigree in that market. We're flying on more aircraft with millions of flight hours, lots of different aircraft types, and all the latest features for making that those type of technologies work. And, you know, good expertise in the DL-178 in the market. We perform all our own certification work. So we have all the artifacts for everything that that we have developed. So why is an RTOS a challenge? In this market, you know, RTOS selection really does matter. And there are, you know, depending on what RTOS you choose, can really increase your productivity and decrease the time it takes to develop software. Some of the key points there are is being able to reuse software and reuse the certification artifacts associated with that software. You want to get your maximum benefit from that. Another key is having configurable I/O and the ability to isolate that software and I/O volatility from the rest of your system so that you can reuse those modules as well. Along with that, it helps to bound the change impact. Most development systems are changing not only during the development phase, but from system to system. So having a modular approach can help you satisfy those and bound those change impacts. And also support product line architectures. Most companies don't want to develop one product and never develop another. Most are taking that product and advancing that from aircraft to aircraft. So just a little high-level architecture of DIOS. As you can see, we start with binary modularity in the kernel. The kernel is a module separate from what we call our platform abstraction layer, which is the PAL that talks to the hardware. And then we have each application partitioned off using the MMU to protect each address space that these applications are running. We also use device drivers in user space so that they can they only have to be certified to the DAO level of the interface that's required and not be linked into the kernel and have to be certified to the highest DAO of the system. So that gives you an overview of kind of that fully modular kernel architecture. So, you know, I talked about reusability, but DIOS was designed to be reusable. It was designed to enable developers to develop component modules that they could use in a binary reuse situation. You know, that is enabled through a few key technologies. You know, we have we certify everything to DO178C now. There's time and space partitioning, which is required in IMA architectures and avionics. We have a dynamic linker loader that takes all these binary components and links them together at runtime to provide the capability. That only works in the kernel if you have, you know, well-controlled software component interfaces. We also support, you know, individual XML configuration files for all that. And no artificial constraints on resources in the kernel, so no magic numbers and anything like that. So you might ask, why is this important? It's been proven, and industry experts will say it's maybe even more, but at least 50% of the effort going into creating a software package for an avionics application is developing the artifacts associated with that software package. These are some of the metrics that we came up with when I worked for Honeywell back in the 90s. And they're still true today, is that, you know, every line of code has, you know, so many lines of test code. There's many reviews, so there's code reviews at all different levels. You've got requirements for, you know, every block of code, and then you have test and verification and coverage and analysis you have to do. So this is all work and artifacts that's associated with your code that you don't want to change. If you change the code, you have to redo all this work. So the more binary reuse you can get, the less of this type of work you have to do. So this is just kind of an example of something that somebody might use. Each one of the blocks in those pictures represent a binary component. And you could say these binary components are almost like the hardware equivalent of a black box. They're protected. Their outer shell is basically protected by a CRC that says it's unchanged. And the APIs are the connections between all these blocks. So it's a way to look at it as binary modules all connected via the API wires. If we map that into like what it looks like in memory, each shared library, each executable is mapped into each of these applications. The code is shared. The data regions are unique, initialized for those regions. They have their own data regions. The kernel provides the linkages to connect these guys together. It ties all these objects together and enables them to be used without being changed in any way. So once you have these components all linked together, it's also nice to know you can take, and with a component model, you can take that binary component, you have a configuration file, XML, that's tied to that. You have all the verification results and reports that you did to verify the component operates correctly. You have the integration test and all the coverage analysis, too. So each one of these components carries its own documentation and artifacts with it. So this, on a larger scale, you can see, like, the lines represent all the different components, all their configuration, verification data. And you take and block out, like in the top there, you block out four of those and you create an autopilot. And so you have an autopilot component that can move from system to system. So it's, everything's tied up in a nice little package that can move from system to system that needs that type of functionality. And like I said before, I/O is another unique challenge that you have to deal with. I/O changes a lot and is highly volatile. So you have to have a solution for that. And DDCI has something we call IOI. It's basically an adaptable data distribution model that handles data of various periodic aperiodic rates, mixed data rates, buffering, does data type conversion, unit conversion, rate conversion even. So it's a tool that helps you abstract your I/O from the software so that if any of your data rates or data types change, moving it from application to application, you can handle that in the I/O product instead of having to change your application software. So with all those pieces, you can take in an avionics product line, you have your certified system, and you can pull out the different pieces. If you need the nav system executables, as well as those artifacts move into the next system, and you can also get those moved into future systems, and the pieces that you certify along the way can be added to any system as you move across. So just to summarize, DIOS is designed to maximize reuse by enabling the component development model, not only for the kernel, but all applications that you as a developer develop as well. And binary reuse is the key. You don't touch the binary, you don't touch the artifacts. I/O abstraction is also key, and enabling that, reconfiguring it for different targets is key for those systems. We also support product lines with that, and it also enables independent development and testing of those modules. So that is the key, and with that, I'm going to turn it back over to John for our next speaker.
Thank you very much, Gary. Excellent presentation. Before we get to the next speaker, just want to remind the audience to keep those questions coming in. After our fourth speaker, we will go to the Q&A. And now for our third speaker, I'd like to turn it over to Jace Allen. Jace, take it away.
Thanks, John. Today, I'd like to focus on solving development challenges and really focusing on model-based development, validation and verification, and specifically relating to aerospace and avionics systems. Now, DSpace, who is DSpace? DSpace is a world leader in model-based development and real-time systems for over 25 years. We provide tools throughout the model-based development V-cycle, supporting aerospace, automotive, and other industries, and we provide out-of-the-box solutions for rapid controls prototyping, target code generation, hill simulation, along with software solutions for real-time access and testing. We're really the world leader in hardware-in-the-loop systems with over 15,000 systems deployed globally, and we feature advanced tools for virtual validation and model-based development data management, and these can greatly enhance the productivity and provide automation for controls development and, of course, validation and verification. When we look at doing this validation process and the development process with model-based development, we look at safety development standards, especially DO-178C in aerospace. DO-178C was issued a couple of years ago, and it has direct application to model-based development and validation practices. Specifically, the DO-331 supplement specifies that tools need to be qualified if they create a part of the deliverable, but a process needs to be qualified when any MBD tools are used. And so when we look at 178C and DO-278A, whenever models or modeling techniques are used to get certification credit, the model-based supplement DO-331 applies. And most of the objectives in this supplement are about verification. So consequently, we look at a whole MBD tool chain and consider this with efficient verification techniques when we look at satisfying things like DO-178C. So the key to validation and verification for us is always back-to-back testing in model-based development. We look at using models and simulation across all phases of development, and being able to reuse tools and models provides an optimal efficiency throughout this process. A new thing for us is something called virtual validation, which provides a new economy for this process, and this provides ways to reuse tools and enhance the process from pure offline simulation to software in the loop to hardware in the loop. But beyond the models and simulation are the tools used for testing. We need to be able to manage this testing to get traceability back to the requirements that drive our product development, but we also need to be able to automate those test tools and use them throughout the V-cycle. A big key to enable this are really open standards from groups like ASAM and OMG. Key standards that to consider are the ASAM HIL API or ZIL API, the functional mockup interface, and other interface standards like RecIF or OSLC for connecting requirements management tools with MBD tools. From DSpace, our HIL systems, DSpace features something called Scalexio. And Scalexio is our latest multi-core architecture based on a QNX RTOS and Intel Xeon processors. It features comprehensive I.O. solutions to handle all types of devices and interfaces, also utilizing FPGA boards with integrated I.O. We support different aerospace buses such as Airink, Ethernet, MIL-1553, 1394B, and so forth. But another interesting thing of feature of Scalexio is its ability to support multiple OS solutions. So we provide a hypervisor support for other OSs, and one of the applications we've done with a customer is supporting NPSS, or the Numerical Propulsion Simulation System, on Linux. Now, Scalexio really has a flexible software and hardware architecture, so it has modular systems that are expandable. It's easy to add I.O. or communication bus interfaces, but it's also easy to add processors or link systems together to create things like integration test systems in a very modular fashion. When we look at putting that hardware together and managing how do things implement or run on this hardware, we look at the configuration implementation software we have called Configuration Desk. Now, Configuration Desk is a system that lets you integrate plant models, I.O. subsystems, communication buses, and configures the HIL system accordingly. The interesting thing about Configuration Desk is it truly features a concurrent workflow where I can have a true separation of the people that manage plant models versus people that manage the hardware in the loop systems. It manages the tasks and the model architecture, you know, handling for things such as services of interrupts and multiprocessor or multi-core design. It provides bus management interfaces and definitions of interfaces for buses, but it also supports open model interfaces. And one of those key interfaces that we support and open standards in the industry is called the Functional Mockup Interface, or FMI. And FMI is a new standard for sharing models for either simulation or co-simulation, and many of the model vendors today in the field support this open standard. So we also have this new tool called VIOS, which is our virtual validation environment. It's a PC-based simulation platform for virtual ECUs, networks, and plant models. And it allows for software-in-the-loop testing or PC simulation of models and code for model-based development. We want to look at what can it do in terms of the tools in the environment. So we can share the same tools in the environment that we do for HIL testing in the virtual development environment. And it allows for the reuse of models, layouts, tests, and data during real ECU testing and early verification of ECU software and tests without a real hardware prototype. So this toolchain can be used to prepare HIL tests, reducing the burden of using HIL resources, particularly for test development and validation, you know, prior to actual ECU testing. And with this type of an environment, it's possible to set up and validate models, layouts, and tests on a standard PC without the HIL system being available. Since the same tools and artifacts can be used as you use with a HIL system, a smooth transition to real time is possible. Thus, you know, VIOS is really a key part of the toolchain for testing of virtual and real ECUs. And it's a tool chain that truly enables early validation. Automation Desk is our software development environment that is our advanced graphical test development system. It supports different user interfaces for test design, such as graphical test sequences, Python test scripts, and a signal-based testing approach, which is like designing a test on paper, in a sense, in terms of inputs and outputs. It provides key features like an adaptable test framework and function libraries for ease of test development, and also provides pretty advanced features such as real-time testing. Now, Automation Desk uses the ZIL API to access any test systems, including RHILs and VIOS, but also third-party test systems. And the ZIL API is an open standard for both model access or failure simulation, any of the features on a test system that a test language would need to support in the field. But in order to use a tool like Automation Desk or any test systems, it's necessary to take into account, once again, DO-178C. So in order to use Automation Desk and DSpace tools, it's necessary to qualify the process for testing and the tool chain usage in the environment. Now, DSpace can provide support by offering a qualification kit for DO-178C, but we also offer things like workflow documents and suggested usage practices for key safety standards, such as ISO 26262 and other standards. And, you know, Automation Desk is certified for safety system testing by TÜV SÜD. But testing is not the only thing. The testing tool that you use to design tests is not the only thing to consider. In order to provide for traceability and reproducibility in the VNVN domain, DSpace has a data management system called Synect. And Synect is a fully global, multi-user capable database management system. It has modules for model management, signal parameter management, and variant management and workflow, but it also has a powerful test management module which directly supports requirements-based VNV. So Synect Test Management can link requirements from different RM and PLM systems such as DOORS and does this using the RACIF or other import links such as OSLC. The interesting thing about test management is it features test case management, test planning, and remote execution capability. It directly supports many common test tools out of the box, but also supports other test tools and proprietary test tools using an adaptable open plug-in technology. The key of all this, of course, is traceability. Now, using Synect for testing provides the necessary traceability needed for DO-178C and other safety systems processes. It allows for integration with off-the-shelf requirements management tools and systems and provides views for test linkage and features such as gap analysis and test coverage analysis. One Synect key for traceability is not just linking test requirements, but also linking all other MBD artifacts required, such as models and signals and parameters. But then we also have to consider the variance of systems, and this is a big key in industries that we work with. You know, the big issue is really product line explosion, is kind of how it's known in the literature. Based on the number of product variants and the complexity of MBD systems, especially in aerospace. Now, a concept called model-based product line engineering has been introduced in the industry for development, and this is shown to be a successful approach for reducing costs and improving delivery time of systems such as these. In order to manage the complexity due to variations, variant handling must be used in the MBD process. And for proper verification and validation, this variant management must include the integration of all tools involved in this back-to-back testing process of mills to sill to hill. So Synect uses a variant model approach with high flexibility, and this allows it to adapt to customer-specific workflows. And where we show this are in two really, you know, a variety of different ways, but two key areas that they apply this to is one is model management and the other is work process handling. So something we have in Synect called workflow management can be used to ensure that specific plant models are built and parameterized for specific variants of products. And this is an automated process that can be applied to the different facets or different subsystems that are used to compose the models you have. Workflow management can also ensure that all of the elements and tools necessary for specific variant testing are correctly assembled on the workstation without error, or really remove the need for using inefficient manual processes that can be prone to error. You know, this type of variant management doesn't just manage the artifacts, but it provides for more efficient verification and validation processes. So Synect's variant management and workflow management provide direct interfaces to the standard PLM and ALM tools to get the necessary information to do the variant management, but they also provide interfaces to the standard configuration management tools that handle the data artifacts or different file storage pieces that are there for part of the development that you do. So to summarize, you know, there is a needed trend to move model-based development, validation, and verification further to the left side of the V cycle. In order to take advantage of automation and provide reuse, we must consider the whole tool chain. Traceability is needed for not just tests, but all tools and data used for V&V, and this is a cornerstone of DL-178C. So, simulate more, do earlier validation, use continuous automated processes which provide for greater reuse with appropriate tools and standards, and streamline the data flow between tools and steps with good model-based development, data management, and process management. And that's all I have for today. Back to you, John.
Thank you very much, Jace. Excellent presentation. And once again, a reminder to our audience, after our fourth and final speaker who's coming next, we will start our Q&A. So please have your questions coming in. And now for our last speaker, I turn it over to Jordan Kiriakidis. Jordan, please take it away.
Thank you, John. As John says, I'm Jordan Kiriakidis. I'm with QRA Corp. And I will be talking about some of the same themes that were evident in the last talk. In particular, the questions that we're going to ask are, or the ones we try to answer, are where are errors injected into your system? And how can these errors be identified and fixed really at the point of injection? And this problem has been studied, and some of the answers have been echoed in previous talks. This slide shows data from Carnegie Mellon University. If you look at the top right, it's pretty clear now that as systems are becoming more complex, more errors are introduced earlier into the system, and up to 80% of all defects in systems are due originally either to requirements or to designs. And this is because of complexity. Not all errors can be caught in the design stage, especially integration type errors. If you look at now the bottom graph, this shows how much it costs to fix a defect that was introduced at the requirement level. Now, it's pretty intuitive that the longer an error stays in your development cycle, the more expensive it is to fix. And it can get a factor of 100 times if you're down at the level of code or you're actually at the level of building. This is happening all over in aerospace, and it's also happening in automotive systems as well. In fact, for new systems being built, up to 40% of all cost for an entire project can be devoted to testing. And this main cost is due to testing that it's not so much the testing that's expensive, it's fixing the errors that are found in the testing stage. Up to 40%, and that fraction of total project cost is actually growing, and that's what the problem is. If you take, for example, the top 10 defense and aerospace companies in the world, collectively they spend about $87 billion a year on testing, and again, that number is growing. And so at QRA, what we're focusing on is detecting these early stage errors. So if you think of this development V that many listening now are very familiar with, we are at the very top left of the development V because that's where some of the most expensive and wicked errors are hiding in the system. And so the challenge is twofold. One is the requirements problem. So how can engineers write better requirements? And in particular, how can these risks be identified and mitigated at the point of authoring the requirements? And how can we verify the requirements with confidence? And the second challenge is the design problem. You know, the classic V&V statement, are you building it right and are you building the right thing? And do your design satisfy all the requirements definitively? Does the implementation match the intended behavior? So we are developing a solution at QRA. And we are developing first a lightweight solution that can easily fit into existing processes. The idea is to cut through all the noise and easily hone in on the potential problems as soon as possible and as easy as possible. And to do this, we're developing two software tools. One, QVScribe, is for requirements, and the purpose of these requirements is to help you write. The purpose of QVScribe, rather, is to help you write better requirements. And QVTrace is the second tool that's actually further along in our development. This is a design tool. It's a design verification tool, and it helps you create better designs by allowing you to ask questions of your designs and receive answers and thereby better understand what your designs are actually, how they actually behave. Underlying both of these is our analysis engine, which is based on some of the state-of-the-art algorithms for solving complex systems integration verification problems. And also on the requirement side, machine learning and natural language processing that can analyze the actual text. I'm going to start with the QVScribe, and then I'll go on and speak about QVTrace. So QVScribe, it is a software tool that helps authors write better requirements. It does a natural language analysis of your terminology and your sentence structure, and it enforces consistency and reduces ambiguity in your requirements documents. To make it as easy as possible to use and to make the barrier of introduction into your workflow as low as possible, we have written it, this first instance, as a Word plugin. It's actually a Word plugin because we have found that up to 60 to 75% of all requirements either live permanently or initially inside Microsoft Word. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it is a separate discussion, but that is where most requirements either start or always live. So this tool is a plugin, and it works as following. Step one, what you do is you specify the requirement identifier. These are basically using Word wildcards. And once you do that, the tool can auto-detect all the requirements in the document. And there you see in your screenshot, the little light rectangle around a requirement is a requirement that the tool has identified and that is selected. And all the requirements are selected in this way. And it is automatic. You just specify your identifier and it'll select it itself. Once you have all your requirements selected, the third step is to analyze the requirements, and that is the panel on the right. It's a very simple interface. I call it the Amazon five-star ranking of all your requirements. What you're seeing is each individual requirement is parsed, and each individual requirement is given a score from 1 to 5 based on standard practices. Organizations like NASA and ENCOSI have put on best practices. There is also some semantic analysis that detects ambiguities and inconsistencies inside the document. It's very intuitive and it's very interactive. This is actually, this version that I'm showing you here is an open beta that we have, so everyone can go and download it for free, and you can just go to our website, qrecorp.com, and start using it and giving us feedback. There is no cost to join our beta. The tool, as it currently exists, is used by aerospace companies, automotive companies, and even some government departments for producing RFPs. The document you're seeing here is actually a pacemaker document that a company put out as an example of a high-quality requirements document. And you can see from the scores on the right that there are actually quite a few poor requirements in this. We're not quite sure what to do with this now, whether we should talk to this company or not. The tool as it exists now is a syntactic tool. The next stage is to build a whole platform around this where we actually put in a semantic analyzer, put in collaboration, and compare it to actually standards. DO178C was mentioned multiple times in the previous talks. And we are gathering feedback from users in industry. Things that their users are asking for are an export to DORS or to Excel, or export as a compliance table or as a verification matrix. These are things that are all rather simple to do once you have all these requirements identified. At a higher level, we are building an analyzer for entire RFPs to associate ambiguities and risks that live inside the RFP at the very, very early stages, also looking to respond to the RFPs. That's the QVScribe platform. The second tool that I mentioned is QVTrace, and this tool is a querying tool. The previous speaker, Jace from DSpace, mentioned model-based design and its utility, and we completely agree that that is absolutely the way to design these complex systems in the future. What this tool here does is it analyzes Simulink design, and most of you will be familiar from Simulink or MathWorks Progress. The big problem is integration. That's really is the problem. Most of you on the line now understand that integration really is the big problem. So what you're seeing in the main window here is the design. This is a detail of a United States Air Force model that was available for public dissemination. The window at the bottom there, that window, you can ask questions of your model. You ask questions of your model, the tool will give you answers. These are questions, what if type questions, you know. What if this were the situation? Does the tool behave in this following specified way? Can this particular configuration ever exist? These are typical questions that you would ask. The tool will give you answers back of your model. And from those answers you get back, you can ask follow-up questions and thereby really understand your model and gain a deeper comprehension of what the model actually does. The panels on the right are the answers that you get. If you do get a if you do get an answer that's not what you expected, you can ask for a counterexample and a test vector will be generated. You can take that and run it through your simulation tool to actually indeed verify that the error actually is there. These counterexamples trace through the design to isolate affected components. So we've been building this platform for a while. It's in use in multiple aerospace and automotive companies. The key thing about this is that it does not. This is not a test or simulation tool. What this does is analyze the logical structure of your system and tells you what's possible and what's not possible. So it can verify absence of particular errors, not just the presence of industry errors. And that's the QV Trace platform. It really does give you definitive answers to very specific questions. The guiding principle at QRA, when we build these tools, these four points are really our guiding principles. You should automate what can be automated. The goal is not to replace humans, is to help humans by automating that whatever can be automated. We want to integrate into existing workflows. So these are lightweight tools that can integrate into your systems. They're not asking you to change your entire workflow. We've been able to have success by working very, very closely with our industry partners, and we favor solutions over features. We built the particular features we did because those are the ones that were asked for by industry. Here's an example of some of the partnerships we've done that really advanced these tools to a level that, while not as feature-rich as some of the competing tools, do provide features that are most needed in industry right now. As I mentioned, we have a beta program. The QVScribe is available for a public open beta. You can go to our website and download it right now. We've done pilot projects where we jointly develop features of the tool with an industry partner in either a current project or in a shadow project or a historical project to prove the value. We've also undergone some directed development where both us and a partner enter into a collaboration agreement that we build advanced features that are specific interest to the partner. We also integrate with existing tool manufacturers that provide entire suites. With that, I thank you for your time, and now I will hand it back to John for some follow-up Q&A. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much. That was an excellent presentation, Jordan.
Thank you.
And let's get to our first question from the audience. What is the purpose of using virtual validation to run models? Can't you just do this from Simulink? I think we just talked about Simulink in his presentation, but this is for Jace. Jace?
Yeah, the difference is that in virtual validation, I'm not just running models, number one. I'm also maybe simulating or running the code in relative to the plant models that I'm testing it against. The other thing might be that I have other modeling environments, other tools from other, you know, that I'm using models from. But the real key here is that, you know, using something like VLS or virtual validation allows you to use standard interface or test tools to control that environment, to actually run tests on an environment the same way I would in a hardware-in-a-loop system, so that I really have the true extensibility and the ability to propagate the work I do from virtual validation to hardware-in-a-loop validation, that type of thing.
Thank you, Jace. Next question is for Gary. What is DTCI's position on the FACE initiative from the Navy?
Well, it's funny you might say that. I'm actually at that FACE conference right now. Well, DDCI is a member of the FACE Consortium. We've been working with the OSS group to be one of the solutions that is available for the Navy, Army, and other branches that are adopting the FACE standard. We support the A-Rank 653 API, which is part of the FACE initiative in the safety base profile. And we are partnered with another company that provides a solution for the POSIX APIs that are required for the safety profiles as well. So the combination of DDCI and the RTIMS POSIX solution is what we have proposed and what we're moving forward with for the face OSS solution.
Thank you, Gary. Next question. This one is for Gary as well. Gary, can the binaries use configuration files that can change? If yes, is there a need to recertify the binary if it's a configuration file has been modified?
Right. So in the presentation, I talked about each one of these modules has it's an XML configuration file associated with it that defines the resources and everything that that particular module needs. All of those XML files for each one of those modules are combined into something that we call a registry, which the kernel reads in order to understand how to dole out all the resources for all the different components in the system. So the XML the XML files are basically become in a binary format in the registry. The registry does come with a verification tool that you use to verify that the system is doing what you expect. So you run the verification on the system registry and not necessarily on the individual XML files. You verify back that those individual XML files are correct.
Thank you, Gary. I have a question for Bill Tillman from Avico. Bill, what do you see as the next problem area that might occur?
Some of the things we're starting to see is the different IOs that we have on our boards. Everybody always wants something different. We have quite a few options built in, and it becomes a complex subject of how do you tell the customer you have all those options? They're usually there somewhere, but then you got to bring them out to pins as well. So we supply boards. We have connectors on those boards, and those connectors are getting very dense. People do not want to work with real high-density connectors. So a lot of options means you have a lot of pins. So how do you identify that? How do you bring them out to pins? There's a lot of ways to do that, but it's just a configuration issue. And then trying to stay with the lower density connector types with easier to work with and solder type pins, it's a different kind of a problem and an interesting one to solve.
Okay. Yeah, if I could add a kind of a comment
sure.
in on that, that's a very good point. Providing kind of a modular approach to, supplying those I/O functions in addition to the proper signal conditioning for those so that they're properly interfaced to the environment is, kind of an important thing. So having that flexibility is something that really needs to be there. The other nice key here is using FPGA-type solutions that give you adaptability for providing either unique communication or synchronous I/O interfaces that can be pretty powerful for development and test systems.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Bill. Next question is for Jordan. Jordan, do you have plugins for Doors QV Scribe?
We don't have plugins for Doors right now, but that is something that many people have been asking, and that is coming up.
Okay.
And we know that there's many engineers who take requirements in words, and some poor schmuck's job is to translate these into Doors, and we can definitely help them to automate that and have it done with the push of a button.
Okay, and I have another question on QV Scribe. Is it configurable? In other words, can we write our own rules on which it checks the verbiage?
Absolutely. I didn't show that in the screencast, primarily because of time constraints, but you can definitely configure it to check for things like multiple imperatives. You can write your own rules. You can look at for weak phrases. There's a whole category of metrics that you can actually apply to the document to provide useful results from. Very configurable.
Thank you. I've got a question here for Jace. How does Synect impact software quality?
Well, the real key here is really providing that testability and taking you from an initial design when you're either prototyping or developing requirements, taking you through this validation and verification process and really enhancing the quality from the start, you know, moving the testing to the left side of the V-cycle and giving you the ability to test throughout the tool chain before you ever even get to realizable software. But when you get to software, to also have this capability to do either software-in-the-loop testing or hardware-in-the-loop testing to really go through the final steps of validation before you go on platform for, you know, final testing.
Okay. I got a question here for Gary. Gary, what is similar and what is different between DDoS 653 and VxWorks 653?
Well,
aside from spelling.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they do. They are spelled differently from two different companies. Well, ARINC 653 is a standard that defines an API and a scheduling algorithm and kind of system definition. So as far as DDoS and its implementation of 653 and VxWorks 653, the idea there is that, you know, that's really the only industry standard API, and so both of us are following that standard and being able to provide Avionics developers a way to develop their 653 code such that they can move it from either system. And we've actually had customers take 653 code or VX 653 code and move it to DDoS with very little effort. So that is what the similarities between that is. In the differences are the underlying architecture and how that's implemented. So one of the things with 653 is that it's the scheduling algorithm defined is not very efficient, and DDoS has some patented slack scheduling capabilities that can take advantage of this budgeted but unused time that you have to allocate for, you know, the worst case execution for your task. So worst case execution doesn't always happen. So that extra time, we can actually take that and allocate that to other tasks in the system and actually get more work done. So there's some architectural differences underlying that we think can make a much better, more efficient system and give you kind of a hybrid 653 and RMA scheduling algorithm.
Okay, I got time pretty much for just one question here. And I'm going to – it seems like two questions for Jordan kind of ask the same thing, so we'll combine them. The audience wants to know if they can add their own standards and rules and conventions for QVScribe.
Yes, you absolutely can. That's similar to a previous question, that there is a whole configuration screen that you can actually load up, again, right within Word, that will give you all the configuration options and rules on how to judge your requirements.
All right, well, thank you. And that brings us right up to our time limit for today. Sorry we could not get to all of your questions today. Someone may get back to you after the ECAST with more information. I'd like to thank our speakers, Bill Tillman, Gary Gilliland, Jace Allen, and Jordan Kiriakidis for speaking, and also our sponsors, Abaco Systems, DDCI, DSpace Incorporated, and QRA Corp. This ECAST will be archived online today and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. Thank you all for attending, and I look forward to seeing you in future Open Systems Media ECAST. Goodbye.